does the receptacle from which you consume the wine matter? That's not a question I thought I'd be asking. I thought it would just not matter. But it does. But drinking wine out of a wine glass makes the wine better, surely. But it's the same wine if it's out of a tumbler, a coffee mug, or even a styrofoam cup. Yeah, people are out here spending $115 for just two wine glasses. Is that real?
So, yeah, that's the current RRP for two Rydell Pavinum.
Fantastic.
The two packs that you can get, yeah.
Incredible.
I know a guy who can get it to you for $110, though. Hey.
Yeah. Get that at cost.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So to get to the bottom of the glass, this mystery. We have Cal Lee back in the studio. How are you doing?
Hello.
Constantly trying to trip me up with what you write in this.
Just absolute gibberish that I make you read every week. Sometimes it's even spelled correctly.
Wine does taste the same when you drink it from the social media website. Tumblr.
Totally.
So glassware. Not even talking wine today. We're talking wine adjacent.
Yeah.
So can people taste the difference between a plastic cup and a wine glass?
Yes. Next question. I think this is like a really classic thing that I remember I had this university lecturer one time who basically was just like, so a lot of things I'm going to teach you are going to sound ridiculous, and then I'm going to give you an example from your day-to-day life that you have already done, and it'll make a lot more sense. And so my question is, do people think that a can of Coke tastes the same as a glass of Coke? Does milk taste the same out of the like batch 2-liter container as it does in a glass? Because we all sort of actually intrinsically know that there is a difference there. And it's a little more complex than necessarily just being like, oh, there's a different material, thus it has a different flavor. But you know, our sense of taste and our sense of smell are very, very complex. And taste especially has a lot more to do with tactile sensations than I think a lot of people realize. So even just really basic stuff like the texture of styrofoam on your lips will make something taste different to having the texture of glass against it.
Yeah, look, when I read wine out of a styrofoam cup, I internally recoiled because I dislike the concept of drinking out of something made out of that material.
Yeah, and I think everyone knows that, like, inherently knows that, like, the taste of a styrofoam cup, you know. It's why keep cups are actually really sensible, right? Because it's just like, I'm one of those people that I don't like a disposable coffee cup. I think it tastes bad.
Yeah, the tongue is such a sensitive, not just for taste, but for texture. Here's something fun we can all do, you, me, and all the listeners, is to look at a surface, and your tongue will know what that surface will feel like if you licked it.
Yeah.
I'm looking at this microphone sock. I know what it's going to feel like compared to what the table will feel like, compared to what the soundproofing on the walls will look like. And if you at home listening will have a look around your space that you currently inhabit, and just for a moment think about what it would feel like to lick, and you will know.
Yeah, yeah. And hey, if you're in the privacy of your own home, give it a lick.
Right,
you know, go ahead. You know, we're a pro lick podcast here.
Pro lick podcast.
We're not a podcast, we're a radio show.
Close enough.
Close enough. Close enough.
Are all wine glasses created equal?
Part of the inspiration for this topic was I did, so Rydell, who's sort of one of the big top-end fancy wine glass producers or manufacturing companies, I did a masterclass with them a couple of years back. And the point of that was these are the $115 for two wine glasses kind of wine glasses, right? Like, they're varietal specific, which means that, like, there is a wine there that is designed, a wine glass there that is designed to go with Chardonnay. Mm-hmm. And you can put other things in it, but it is designed to go with Chardonnay. And there's like a Riesling glass, and they're all quite different shapes. They've got different lengths of stems. They've got really different bowls. And the first half of that entire masterclass, you don't drink any wine. You're just drinking water out of these different wine glasses. And it really makes you start to appreciate how much the differences in shape really have quite a profound impact on the way that you actually taste things. And there's a few different reasons for that. A lot of it has to do with the velocity of the liquid coming out of the wine glass means that it will hit a different point in your actual palate and tongue.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that that first taste is going to be focusing on different... Like, everyone's seen that, like, the classic tongue map. Like, it's an oversimplification, but, you know, it sort of still broadly holds true where different sort of taste buds are grouped together in different parts of the tongue and focus on different taste sensations. So if you can actually design a wine glass, knowing that, okay, the primary taste of this wine is going to be, let's say, like, it's a Riesling, right? Really acidic, super bright, really pretty. So you want that to be able to hit the, you know, the pleasurable acid-sensing parts of your tongue first, because that's going to be a really nice experience. Then when you do the flip of that and then you put a Cabernet into that wine glass, the Cabernet tastes really wonky because all of the rich, lovely, supporting stuff that is meant to be in there is quite dampened by noticing how much there is a searing acid line behind it.
Right.
I think the other thing to me that makes a lot of difference is the thickness of a glass. Like, and you know, different people I think will have different levels of sensitivity to this, but I find like thicker wine glasses, you sort of tend to have a more pronounced, flavor, for lack of a better term, mm-hmm. to them than like a thinner wine glasses, because you get to a point where the thinness is a lot harder to actually perceive whilst you're drinking something, as opposed to like those sort of like really classic, like big chunky bistro glasses, kind of thing.
And what about stemless wine glasses? Is the elevation of the wine, is that what we're talking about when we talk about
Stemless wine glass. And it's, there's a lot of... the reason I sort of put this in here is because I think there's a lot of people that are very anti-stemless wine glasses. Mm-hmm. I'm not. I quite like a stemless glass. I literally always have four in my bag for, like, whenever I go camping or go to uni or anything like that, because, you know, they're better for sort of, just knock-around day-to-day glassware. But the thing to remember is the actual stem on a wine glass does serve a functional purpose, and that's because... when you have a wine, especially something that's chilled, you don't want to be basically introducing body heat into that directly. So the stem is giving you something to hold so that basically you never have to directly touch the bowl of the wine glass. And this is also to say, it's just like, hey, if you're buying a glass of wine, especially if it's something like a Riesling or like a really delicate, like chilled white or rosé, and you're about to drink that in the midday sun, and the first thing you do is just like, grab it by the bowl with your hot, sweaty hand, that wine is going to get warm significantly quicker than if you're grabbing that by the stem, just because of that sort of transference of heat property there. Mm-hmm. But also, yeah, I think stemless wine glasses are really good for more casual mm-hmm. circumstances.
Sure.
But if I'm ever doing a formal tasting, I would always have a stem, or like an actual, probably like an ISO stem, which is like the International Science Organization. International Science Standards Organization, like, default wine tasting glass.
And just on the last set of glassware, I suppose, that you could associate with wine drinking is decanters.
Yeah.
So just give us a little bit of a summary of what decanters are, and then just why they matter in drinking wine.
Yeah. And so decanters are a broad spectrum of things. Basically, it is anything you can decant a wine bottle into, which is to say, empty the full contents into... Typically, they're glass. There's a large history of different kinds of decanters that we sort of don't really interact with, especially like post-World War II kind of thing. Mm. But the broad assumption is basically when wine is in the bottle, it's hard to see if there's any sediment in it. It's sort of hard to get any oxygen in there and aerate it. So by decanting a bottle, you're basically allowing it to... Typically, you want to have a decanter that's got a very wide base so that when the wine's actually sitting in it, like a bottle's worth of wine is sitting in it, the actual surface area on it is much greater than it would be if it was just sitting in the bottle of wine.
Yeah.
The actual act of decanting is also introducing air in it. Obviously, you know, it helps to remove sediment, which, you know, especially when you start talking about older wines, sediment will just naturally occur in there, that kind of thing. I think there's a lot of myth about decanting. I think a lot of people will be like, oh, yeah, like, you know, it instantly makes the wine better or rah, rah, rah. For me, when I think about decanting, I'm speeding up the point where I'm starting the journey with that wine. And there's certain styles of wine, especially like a lot of things that are older or maybe like are really tight and quite closed off, like big reds a lot of the time I'm thinking about here, where if you just take a glass of that as soon as you've popped the cork on it, it's going to be pretty austere and maybe a little surly, maybe really tightly wound. So giving it that little bit of time to sort of like reacclimatize and reoxygenate will start to open up some of those really beautiful notes in it. And I find that if you don't do that, then you end up with that kind of unfortunate circumstance where you get half or three quarters of the way through a bottle of wine and you're like, oh, this is really starting to turn into something delicious. But like, you've already downed half the bottle when it wasn't sort of in that optimal space. Yeah. So here's my one recommendation for decanting for everyone out there. If you are at a dinner party or at a restaurant with enough people that you're going to drink multiple bottles of wine and one of them needs to be decanted, decant it when you open that first bottle of wine, because you're going to want to leave it for at least... There's no point in decanting a wine and then drinking it straight away. Like, you need to give it time to hang out and leave it. An hour is good. 2 hours is probably better. But, like, you want to give it that time to actually rest there. So I always suggest having a starter wine before you move on to your more serious decanted wine.
There you go. Austere, surly, and tightly wound, and then opening up sounds like me pre and post my first glass of wine.
Yeah.
So what are you drinking this week?
I had the pleasure last night of doing The Drop with Guy Palmer-Brown from Mighty Isle, and I'm going to tell everyone to go buy a bottle of his single vineyard Piccadilly Chardonnay. That thing is a screamer. It's like intensely oxidatively handled. It has this beautiful, rich sort of like nutty, salted caramel, like apple pie kind of thing going on in it. I think it's like absolutely delicious. The amount of people I gave that to last night who are not Chardonnay drinkers and then drank it and were like, this is incredible. It sort of goes to show what you can actually do with, especially a style and a region that typically does these very like pretty, quite tight and pristine sort of little examples of the wine. That's what I'm drinking at the moment.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining us again, Cal.
It's an absolute pleasure.
We'll see you next week. Mm-hmm. We're talking about tannins.
Yeah, tannins. I talk about them all the time, but this time we're going to really focus on them, you know, the little grainy guys.
The thing that wine dads love to talk about, their Shirazes.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll be really diving into that. So we'll see you next week. Thank you so much.
See you next week.